thanks very much.
Is that for you?
Does that work? Is that okay? Thanks very much, Deanna. And thanks, Rebecca. That was wonderful. I'm going to read completely from the Sparrow, which is a selected poems, a kind of a long one, and it thus, you know, includes, you know, many of my books, most of them, and thus I'll be giving you a taste of different books. This one is from Song of Fear, which is kind of in the middle of my writing. And it's called Beirut 1982. When I first came to Beirut in 1957, I was a spy and everyone here was a spy. The streets were full of Maharanis with green stones between their eyes, and each green stone hid the plans on microfilm of another weapon that could destroy the sun. Everyone knew exactly what everyone was and what he wanted, the women, the plans. And so we tried dispensing with cumbersome disguises. Besides, as they say, the best disguise is no disguise. Get rid of them all and you might be invisible. Of course, there may have been many invisible spies in Beirut in 1957. But most of us clung to the last, most tragic and alluring incognito. Those were the days. Nothing but jet-set princesses naked on the beach or in the casino. The roulette wheel went round and round, the chemin de fer went straight ahead, and the women lost and lost from the inexhaustible funds of fat opium peddlers at their backs. For they were mistresses of arms merchants and wives of diplomats. What agonies they suffered dining on hotel balconies. Boredom, regret for lost innocence, lush hair and buttocks sheathed in light. And how much they needed to be refreshed. Sometimes the women spies would hire a yacht and the day would be one long party on the sea. The decks were swamped with ever-shifting and opening white waves. They lay on their bellies, waving their toes in the air, whispering and playing cards. We male spies were captain and crewmen, waiters and bodyguards. And the Mediterranean was more than clear. It was a telescope that magnified how every muscle in every thigh beat its tiny wing as those women with their snorkels and spear guns floated through old wrecks and drowned Greek porticos. Did they succeed this way in subduing us? We were frantic with longing and by turns with pleasure. That was before the Civil War, the Dark Ages again, Christian and Muslim. They take things so seriously. When they shoot someone, he is maimed or dead. It was different among us spies. We used to get beaten up, tortured, cracked on the head a dozen times a night, and go dancing afterwards. The ones who got killed were only lumber anyway, beefy torpedoes who never had any childhood, who never existed at all until suddenly they were standing there on guard, always looking the wrong way, as we crept up and dispatched them. The enemies of freedom would have us in their power time after time, but never kill us. Instead, they'd dump us in an abandoned barge and wait till we came back again and destroyed them. But the kingpin would always escape, an aristocratic mind, servant of a totalitarian power, tragically conscious that history had bound him in the end of things as an agent of the end. He would always rise again. We would always defeat him. We would always have victory. He would always have fate. Those days were eternity, were heaven. Now the F-16s go whining and pirouetting over on another bombing run. The old Nazis and mafiosi have fled from their pink ocean villas. The jets come in low. I see them hit their targets, or maybe just anything. An anti-aircraft gun, a house, some women the guerrillas are hiding behind, and the hospital for hydrocephalic children. There are 400 of them there, living in their own dirt now that the staff has fled. And the spies have all fled to Hong Kong or Rio. Everyone left here now is an average character. Old women in black robes, fat men in plaid slacks, shrieking, hugging themselves, swaying in the streets all day, all night, sometimes putting a limb in a little sack. And no orders have been sent to me here for years. So provisionally, I stick to the first assignment, to find our friend. I had never seen him, but they described the man to look for. Even if he has failed, they said, even if he's surrounded by torturers and knows we can't acknowledge his existence, even if he wants to let death come or kill himself, or is already a dead man, he'll remember us. Our cause will be enough for him, and he'll live. That day so long ago, when his call was cut off in a strangled gasp, we didn't know where he was. Maybe Leopoldville or Vientiane. For 25 years, I never knew why they sent me to Beirut. Now from my room on the Green Line, I can see tank trucks spraying disinfectant on the rubble heaps that cover rotting bodies, and children unmoved by the whine of incoming shells dragging heavy buckets of water home. This is a poem that is from the same book and might be the title poem of The Sparrow. It's called Death of a Sparrow. The twisting dance of the sparrow, delicate agony as it tried to bite its wounded shoulder. Circular flurries, brief trembling flights, and fallen landings. Then the weight, panting, a new try for a low perch, a try that fails, and the contortion of brown feathers falls back down in gray dust and the light green maple flowers shriveled, littered there. When I approached, a fury of terror possessed the sparrow, racking it with useless struggles, pain, exhaustion, more terribly distorting the poor wing. Understanding that nothing could be done, I went and saw another sparrow fly down, and the two bob a while as sparrows do in the high unmown grass and dandelions, companions. Then the strong one was off, a willing arrow, gone, curving into the trees. The next day, the sweet body in the grass lay there, calmer than it had ever been, even in sleep. And the life of the hungry sparrow, the winged shape in death more winged still, after pain accomplished slowly, unobserved, in a long laborious night, once all had flown. Now, this is a poem from decades later, called Conflicting Desire. It was the name of the book, Conflicting Desire. It doesn't name a sparrow exactly, but it's kind of the other view, the view from the other of those couple of sparrows in the middle of the last poem, Conflicting Desire. The birds are quieting down, and in the bird bath, fresh rainwater shines, empty, perfectly calm, as the birds will later be. Evening. They still stir now, but don't fly out to drink it. They keep hidden. It's too late for them. They can wait for tomorrow or have to wait. But he remains anxious to touch the unmoved waters changing of colors into silence, to answer its cloud-crossed semblance of a glance. And yet, he thinks, to live just one day as a bird, to get up speaking unguarded a premonition of sun, hunt all day long, flying across valleys and over rivers, to flurry and battle in thickets, shine in feathers, and continue sometimes over the body of another, a broken bird, and then go back, stir, and fall asleep as the sky whitens. This is a poem just opposite Conflicting Desire in this book, from the same book, Conflicting Desire, which was about 1999, I think, or 98. And it's called Freedom. And it's a medieval scene in which a hermit monk, sort of, in one of those beautiful kind of forest mountain scenes that Renaissance painters love to paint, sees a knight go riding by on crusade, perhaps, sees the knights go up and down the road, you know, kind of like Sir Lancelot and the Lady of Shalott goes up and down the road. Freedom. It's a green country filled with otherworldly woods, with distant blue gravity-defying mountains pierced by great natural bridges and jutting out impossibly over flower-banked streams. The many towers, witch-capped, crenellated, partly toppled, all withhold their ladies, singing, but inaudible here, where knights pass up and down the dusty road, metal anomalies, shining at noon like the pit of earth or hell might if opened up to light. One returns covered with wounds, covered with cattails, dented and corroded, glinting. One sets out, blinding, baffling vision with rays, sapphire, topaz, like a water drop in the sun. The road of salvation is a tedious enslavement, the mendicant friar thinks, almost asleep, watching them from a fat, mossy border, chewing his oaten straw. An endless round, the ritual training, initiation, the adventure, rumors of the deaths of others, never you who failed. And then a moment of music and vague light in a ruined chapel. When what you remember, if you had true courage, courage to tell truth, is the sting of old cuts and flies, the stink of rags not changed for weeks. This friar possesses the vast height of sky, a breeze in just the tops of the highest oaks behind him, and dark, sharp leaves of a lily next to his eyes, with one green pilgrim, six-legged, journeying across. This friar, too, was a warrior and rode for Jerusalem once, but maybe he forgets. I'll go back another decade to Song of a Traveler, which obviously is related to the traveling in that poem, Freedom. So this is Song of a Traveler. If only I could be the air that fills my lungs. It enters all their dark tunnels, their branch-roofed roads, and comes to every end, fills all ends with itself, and goes still farther, changed into a new world, the blood, flowing in calm, strong currents, bringing life. And not be what I am, a tiny wanderer along the forking paths and streams of my own body, with always a new turn to face, a new decision, one way to take, many others never to know, with always a growing envy of the air that gently possesses everything. But but not as my hope does, which drags its horse behind it, and when sometimes it arrives at a place it loved from far off, it can't bear to stay there even long enough to cry or sleep, but trudges onward that same night. And this is a very early poem, probably written when I was about 23 or 24, called A Natural History of Words. I almost recall the origin of these words. On a night like the interior of coal, landscape of shadows, although no light existed to make it possible, no objects to cast it forth. There was a pond with a dark internal fire, a half moon in the polished sky, and a rim of low hills with above them identical dark clouds that swelled from their own inverted ground. It was a mirror gazing in a mirror, and the one faulty symmetry, a being pierced by unmeaning whispers, flooded with echoes. Crying reflections, they plundered a rib from lonely contentment, the old days of silence and the sun thrust into the quiet eye on the blade of a pine needle. A child's silence, all comfort and wildness, where at noon seeds and withered hands and pyramids fell without sound in the shadow of offices. Then the dead returned, but not in their own forms. Fire and cold, which killed men, became a man. Never again would I fail to speak to the many-leveled city of bees, or fear to trust my boat to the ocean dissolved in evening. Sometimes between two woods shrinking in mist, the whole earth seems to appear in an almond of light, suspending itself just above the ground, from its fingers spreading the roads of the visible. In all flesh, all mineral, all haze, and the most perfect clearness, there is speaking, conversations remembered. But of the words, the speakers, what they said, nothing remains, only a tone, a shape to be filled with what occurs to us. Perhaps sadness, pride, desire, love with resignation or triumph, something that mingles with matter and moves freely at the core. The birds draw it out in their beaks. It's the filament with which they link the trees and the open spaces, afternoon and dusk. It's the new path they invent through this ancient park to which each second restores a wilderness greater than maze or mystery, a pleasure planted here long ago, so there could be no end to understanding. Now, how am I doing in terms of time?
See, a couple more minutes.
Two more minutes.
Yeah.
Then I will end with another Sparrow poem, which will take just about 2 minutes or 1.5, and which in a lot of ways I think of as the title poem. There's lots of sparrows in here. There's about 7 by name, and as you've heard in Conflicting Desire, there's some others that are just sort of implied. And so this poem is from my book, Night Street Repairs, which came out in 2004, and it's just called Love Song. And it's just a city scene, people sitting in an outdoor patio eating, and the bird comes down to try to steal some crumbs. Love song. Scorn of flesh spread everywhere, coarse gravy badly mopped on lips of the confessed adepts of the body, checking their hair, one with the humid dust, in breath-smeared windows and mirrors. Maybe a sign you were on your way was there already. the sidewalk a paper cup, and the fitful wind rolled, wavered, and reversed, miraculously spared by the dispirited hooves of the herd, stampeding to exult, moved, stung by flies. Innumerable head, it trampled through, weltering and hung fat, a reeling wash of breakers in a hot glittering. And the flood covered a poorly dressed woman laughing quietly with two small sons. Confusion swept up the banal brilliance of a veiled sky, flowers hanging bright from balconies, new goddesses, body armored, ignorant a wisp of tulle once among clouds was enough, clinging between the thighs. And when a sparrow came down in the crowd's midst, and ran across a table to seize a crumb from under idle, malevolent hands, my thought, abandoning that street a moment then for warrens even more obscure, for nests unseen and closed, stained rooms, darted with you again, threatened and uncaught. Thanks, everybody.